Income inequality is growing in the United States at an alarming rate. The top 1% now own more of this nation's wealth than the bottom 90% combined. Senator Sanders, when you introduced your wealth tax, which would tax the assets of the wealthiest Americans, you said, quoting you, Senator, billionaires should not exist. Is the goal of your plan to tax billionaires out of existence?
Anyone can tell you the name.
You're welcome. Diamond is sucked.
Mark Zuckerberg will end up, and it's going to be a face without the book.
Without the face.
Hey, Megan, how are you?
Now they're chipping away at the normalization of pedophilia, and the left is embracing this type of behavior.
We welcome Dinesh D'Souza.
I know I ticked him off. In a certain sense, it's a giant up yours to Obama, and that's why the left is freaking out over it.
Jack Kennedy and LBJ, Clinton, and the double standard from the left.
Yeah, I love how the left does nothing but push the most bizarre practices down our throats and up our tailpipes.
It takes a real man to tackle the hot issues that really matter.
Michael Hart is the man of this house.
Welcome to the Michael Hart Show.
It is the 17th day of October 2019, and you're listening to the Michael Hart Show. Right here on the Heart of America Broadcasting Network. This edition brought to you by our friends over at Liberty Tech, LibertyOneTech.com for all your tech support needs. That's Liberty, then just the number one, Tech.com. Also, our friends over at The Land Report, Alabama Water Management, and of course, The Unknown America Project. For more on the book that started it all and what the project's all about, please go over to theunknownamerica.com. Come and see absolutely no shipping or handling charges. We'll even send you a complimentary copy of the United States Constitution just to piss off your friends. So go check it out right now, and also subscribe to the YouTube channel, Heart, H-A-R-T, Heart of America. This is the dystopian state on display, Democrat debate style edition of the program. To hear the Democrat 2020 hopefuls on the debate stage, you would think that America has long surpassed George Orwell's most dire predictions. What's with all the gnashing of teeth and the hand-wringing from the left? We take a look at some of the more dire comments and even kookier solutions from those that seek the presidency. Also, the hot trending news of the day, this day in history, your calls at 929-477-3761 when the time is right, and this ain't it. And it's our weekly speed date with Megan Barth of ReaganBabe.com. Megan's going to pop in a little bit earlier today than normal because we're going to abbreviate this program by about 20 minutes today just to give us an opportunity to get out and take care of some other business. We're getting a lot of opportunities to not just complete books, but also speak at events and things that we're working on that has really kind of backed us up in terms of what we're able to accomplish in the course of any given day. So today is another one of those days where we have some opportunities to get out there and hit the pavement a little bit early. So Megan will come in early, and then we will join you again on the next edition of the program. Little bit of breaking news, unexpected news for a lot of folks, where Representative Elijah Cummings, the powerful House Democrat who represented Baltimore for more than two decades and a very vocal critic of President Trump, died earlier today after battling some health problems, according to a statement from his office. And although we have been longtime critics ourselves of Representative Cummings and his viewpoints, especially as it relates to the current administration, certainly our thoughts are with his family at this particular time. I know that there's been a lot of chatter in social media, et cetera, about the about the relationship between Cummings and Trump. And of course, many representatives in the House are quite despaired over this, as they should be. He was 68 years old when he died at Gilchrist Hospice Care, which is a John Hopkins affiliate. He was chairman of the House Oversight and Reform Committee, and again, was one of the most powerful Democrats in D.C. and has played a key role in the Democrats' ongoing efforts to impeach Trump. And despite our differences, we certainly, we wish his family the best. And again, our thoughts are with the family at this very troubling time. So again, Representative Elijah Cummings, dead at the age of 1968. On this day in history, it was on this day in 1931 that Al Capone is convicted of income tax evasion. I love me some mafia. I've been a mafia buff for many, many, many years, and things like this just kind of, well, they catch my attention. And that's pretty much a focus of this program. For those of you that are brand new, not that we do mafia stuff, although we frequently do, but the fact that history matters, the past matters, and that's what we speak on very frequently. For those of you that might not be up to speed on that, not only do we speak to the unknown America, myths and little known oddities about the greatest nation on earth, but also the impact of the media on culture, the way the media packages stories. And for the last couple hundred years, quite frankly, they've packaged them, and oftentimes to cast aspersions on administrations or just to craft certain narratives, or frankly, just because they didn't vet the stories out. And if you don't understand the history of this country, if you're not up to speed with the history of this country, then making sense of the news of the day is virtually impossible, because it is all actually quite cyclical. So that's why we go into these days in history on each edition of this program. So again, 1931, Al Capone convicted on income tax evasion because they couldn't get him on anything else. Also on this date, 1979, Mother Teresa is awarded the Nobel Peace Prize. 1979 as well, the 17th of October to be specific, the Department of Education Organization Act creates the United States Department of Education. Something that we're not going to get too in-depth with today, but certainly an agency that this particular radio host is not particularly fond of. That's pretty much all of the news of the day that is worth mentioning. Again, this is the dystopian state on display, Democrat debate style. And my God, if you're a Democrat in this country today, you must be quaking in your boots, because America really sucks. I mean, it's like sucking out loud. We've got unbridled unemployment. We've got billionaires owning everything. We have got health care that is completely in the tank. We've got Syria, North Korea, the Chinese, LeBron James. Somebody do something. We got to do something. We got to get rid of the cows. And oh, by the way, now they're talking about taxing your frequent flyer mile. Yeah, we're not going to get into that story. If you happen to listen to Rush Limbaugh, he is all over that particular one. But now we got to tax everybody we can possibly tax. And we saw this with the debate that took place a couple of nights ago. Obviously, we were not with you yesterday. We may very well have gotten into it then. But it's not so much what happened in the debate, because we didn't really hear a whole lot new. But it's just the viewpoints of those that are on the stage, the Democrats. And dystopian is the exact opposite of utopian. And it's a state of complete despair. And if you want to think about, you know, for comparison's sake, George Orwell's 1984 is a good example of that state in despair. And my gosh, to listen to the Democrat debate was not only kooky and at other times intellectually challenging, but it was just plain, flat out depressing. And to give you an idea of kind of some of the tone of the debate, back to the opening question that was, or the question that we opened the program up with, is the question that is directed at Senator Bernie Sanders. So we're going to play the question one more time, and then we're going to give you Sanders' response.
Income inequality is growing in the United States at an alarming rate. The top 1% now own more of this nation's wealth than the bottom 90% combined. Senator Sanders, when you introduced your wealth tax, which would tax the assets of the wealthiest Americans, you said, quoting you, Senator, billionaires should not exist. Is the goal of your plan to tax billionaires out of existence?
When you have 500,000 Americans sleeping out on the street today, when you have 87 million people uninsured.
I want to stop right there for just a moment. Speaking of homelessness, the homelessness of Americans, as tragic as it is not because of billionaires. Now, you could make the argument that if billionaires were paying more in taxes or not allowed to be as wealthy as they are, that that money could be redirected to address the homelessness problem. But it's also a matter of enforcement of laws, job opportunity, mental health care, and a direct assault on the opioid alcohol drug crisis in this country. And as I replay the Sanders audio, I want you to listen between the lines, so to speak, to the blame game, because that's exactly what's taking place here. It's not the fault of governments or communities. It's not the fault of the mental health community. It's not the fault of the individual. It's not the fault of anybody. It's the fault of billionaires. If billionaires, the underlying message here from Sanders in the debate, if billionaires didn't exist, economically speaking, if they didn't exist, if their assets and their money was more evenly distributed, that many of the social woes of this country will go away. Now, I'm going to repeat this again from homelessness, but it's homelessness to health care and beyond. He's speaking of he misspoke at the 87 people, but he's going to get into the other number, the 87 million people that are uninsured or underinsured. But again, if we only didn't have billionaires, that condition does not exist. I just don't understand how you can extrapolate that out, because the more I have does not come from you. And it's interesting to note, and think about this for just a second. In a socialist mindset, if somebody has too much and somebody has too little, you should Robin Hood them and take from the rich and give to the poor. So how do you get to that point? The mindset of the Democrats is this: if I have $1 billion, it must have come from somebody that doesn't have it. That's the whole wealth income inequality debate. And nothing could be further from the truth. That's absolutely ridiculous. That's Pantomime was saying, this really good looking guy over there, he's hot. He's a player. He's got 3 girlfriends that he dates regularly. And because he's got 3 girlfriends that he dates regularly, that means there's 2 men out there that can't get a date. How do you draw that conclusion unless you're a Democrat?
When you have 500,000 Americans sleeping out on the street today, when you have 87 million people uninsured or underinsured, when you got hundreds of thousands of kids who cannot afford to go to college, and millions struggling with the oppressive burden of student debt. And then you also have 3 people owning more wealth than the bottom half of American society. That is a moral and economic outrage. And the truth is, we cannot afford to continue this level of income and wealth inequality, and we cannot afford a billionaire class whose greed and corruption has been at war with the working families of this country for 45 years. So if you're asking me, do I think we should demand that the wealthy start paying, the wealthiest, top 0.1%, start paying their fair share of taxes so we can create a nation and a government that works for all of us? Yes, that's exactly what I believe.
There are so many things wrong with this that time prohibits me from even exploring them. But let's take a little bit of trip back in history. And let's go back to about the year 1907, 1908, back in the era of the classic robber barons, whether they were named Vanderbilt or Carnegie or whatever the case may be, Loeb, Kuhn, the name, the list is quite long. These people in that period in time were pretty much all Democrats or Democrat donors, people like J.P. Morgan. These were the wealthiest of the wealthy, and in that period in time, they were celebrated by the Democrat Party. Now today, people that are job creators and who have amassed great fortunes are on the receiving end of the vitriol of the party, as though they are some kind of a solution. Interestingly enough, the socialist view on economics alludes to the fact or the point of the belief that there's a finite amount of money. And there is, but there's a finite amount of money. So the billionaires are holding on to a larger amount of that finite amount of money to the detriment of those without. Okay, if they're so opposed to billionaires because there's a finite amount of money and we have to redistribute it to the poor, why can they not then therefore extrapolate that there's a finite amount of money to support their other socialist programs? You see, there's an unending bucket of money when I have these weird utopian programs of healthcare for all and job growth for all and homes for all and cars for all. But that same dichotomy does not apply when it comes to billionaires. There's a finite amount of money, so we have to take it from the billionaires and give it to the poor. But there's not a finite amount of money when we are proposing social programs that A, couldn't work and could never be funded, because at the end of the day, there's a finite amount of money that the Sanders' own comments he admits. It's just mind-blowing. And it's part of my marketing. In my speaking business, I also teach presentation skills, and I go out to corporations and universities and whatnot, and I teach people how to speak in public. And it's not that I teach people how to write speeches. It's that I teach people how to move people to action, how to become charismatic on the stage, enthusiastic, how the structure of a speech will bring a person in sense of a storyline from one assumption to another to a call to action. Because at the end of the day, most professional speakers in America suck. And I'm sorry, it's just true. There's some great ones out there, but a lot of lecturers, I love watching these history lectures on like the History Channel. Some of these professors are beyond brilliant. God, it's like watching paint dry. So what I do is I teach people how to really own the stage, how to convey a message, and how to be an articulated speaker. Now, with that said, part of my marketing materials, and this even got picked up, I want to say it was my brainy quote some years ago, was one of the top five communications quotes in history. And I was very moved by that. But anyway, it's a quote that I uttered but without even planning years and years and years ago when I was actively involved in a group called Toastmasters. And the quote goes like this: the ability to speak eloquently is not to be confused with having something to say. There's a lot of eloquence in political speech, but they're not saying anything, at least not anything that makes any sense. They're not saying anything that has any solution based. It's all a matter of doom and despair, rich people bad, poor people need what rich people have, because we have a finite set of resources. Think about this for just a moment, and then we'll get to a few calls. If we have a finite set of resources, which is why we have 87 million people underinsured, student loan debt that can't be repaid, and we're talking about homelessness, if we have a finite set of resources that would demand the reassignment of wealth, how does that work in a socialist government? Do you see that in their own rhetoric, they're admitting that their ideology is a failed ideology from the start? Socialist ideology demands an infinite capitalization. The money's always there, and it's plentiful, because these programs demand funding, whether it's the elimination of school debt, that, by the way, these students took on themselves, voluntarily, I might add, and also to the point of kids going to school. We don't need everybody going to college. The world is full of educated derelicts. We need truck drivers. We need roofers. We need railroad engineers. There's a lot of blue-collar jobs out there that do not require a college degree, and we need these people. Yes, your doctor is important, but so is that orderly that makes the operating room pristine for the next patient. We need the blue-collar society. Everything in that statement was asinine, because as I personally get wealthier, and I'm not a rich man by any stretch, that's not what I'm saying, but as I earn more money, you don't by default earn less. If you're in a corporate environment and you get promoted from a mid-management position to, say, vice president, and your salary goes from $80,000 a year to $100,000, did somebody else in that corporation lose $20,000? Doesn't work that way, does it? But the Democrats certainly imply that it does. And the only way to eliminate that condition is to vote them into office. Hello, Clark. How are you?
Hey, Michael. I'm well. And yourself?
Oh, just grand.
There you go. Another manic Thursday. Yeah, so generally speaking, if you provide a good or service and I provide a good or service, the better you do, the better I do, because the better you do, the more likely you are to avail yourself to my service or purchase the product that I produce. And I don't know why that's difficult for people to grasp, but it is. This zero-sum thing, I guess, is easy to sell to people, and they kind of count on that.
Yeah, they do.
You know, I've been paying attention here. This Russian collusion hoax didn't work out for the Democrats. The Ukraine collusion thing, I don't know how much longer they're going to ride us, but it ain't taking them anywhere. They weren't successful with the 25th Amendment way to get rid of Donald Trump. Emoluments Clause hadn't gotten them very far. That blows up in their face every time they pull that out. So, you know, when they get off of the Ukraine thing, do you think they're going to become rational people and get over the Trump derangement thing, Michael, or are they going to go to something else?
Oh, it's something else. They can't get over the derangement. It's all they've got, Clark.
Okay. So, how did Barack Obama beat John McCain? Downturn in the economy, right?
Correct.
Now, yeah. And you and I both understand that, you know, what happened to our economy mid-2007, that had been coming for 25, 30 years. But as far as the low-information voter was concerned, there was absolutely nothing wrong with our economy until John McCain named Sarah Palin as his running mate, and he went ahead of Barack Obama in the polls. And then somehow or another, within 10 days or so of that, our economy tanked. Now, the fact of the matter is what, like $500 billion in debt got called, and it caused some serious upheaval in some financial institutions. Oh, I'm seriously wondering, Michael, what kind of attack they're going to make on our economy / stock market in order to try to win a 2020 election.
You know,
what do you think?
It's very concerning to me as a former stockbroker, because although I was a moderately successful one, I did work in Wall Street for a few years, and I understand the emotional aspect of what drives stocks, or at least the indices, if you will. And, you know, people are always referring to the Dow Jones Industrial. Well, the industrial index is not the only one out there. There's airlines and others. But the point is that the markets will respond negatively to anything that they think is a threat to their viability. And what I'm speaking of is this. If you have a Democrat that's elected to the Oval Office, the stock market, Wall Street, will respond very, very negatively, because they are fearful of things like the breakup of Facebook and Google. You know, Sanders wants to go after these billionaires. Well, you know, what they don't tell you, these billionaires don't have a checking account with $1 billion in it. It's stock and assets and holdings and you know, benefits and bonuses and all kinds of other ways that they are compensated. So to take the wealth away from billionaires, you almost have to begin to dismantle the very companies that made them as wealthy as they did. The whole antitrust argument comes into play. Wall Street is terrified of that. They are terrified of having, you know, major corporations and tech giants. Look, Google pisses us all off. I get that. But it doesn't deserve to be broken up. You know, I'm a free market guy. Let's create some competition here. But that's exactly what the plan is. And they don't seem to, people don't seem to realize, even Democrats. Democrats have savings accounts. They have pensions. They have retirement accounts. Get a Democrat elected and watch what happens to the value of your portfolio. It will tank and it will not rebound for years to come.
Oh, well, Michael, if somebody could guarantee me that we get 5 more years of Donald Trump, I'd probably just go ahead and retire and live off of the T. Rowe Price stuff, you know? But I don't get that guarantee. So, you know, what you bring up kind of makes me think about Elizabeth Warren. You know, Wall Street will actively work against her if she gets the nomination.
Yes, they will.
And she's already, what, she's got Google all pissed off at her. And I think if we go back, you remember Barack Obama always talked about the evil fat cat bankers. But then every time you turned around, he was giving them a few billion dollars here and there. And Hillary talks a good socialist game. But if you start looking at her history, every chance she gets, she's personally enriching herself.
Well, sure. But even, you know, you take a look at it. It's like I said a moment ago about the eloquence aspect of what they're saying. Barack Obama was all about fair and open immigration. But yet, you know, quietly behind closed doors, he's deporting more illegal immigrants than a previous president had. And so, you know, he was speaking out of his mouth, but acting out of his ass.
So why do you think Barack and Hillary could talk down Wall Street so much and yet they still tacitly supported both of them, and Elizabeth Warren is perceived as a big threat? I think it's because Elizabeth Warren is a believer, and it scares the fool out of them.
Yeah, but I think there's a little bit more to it. I think there's, you know, when Obama and Hillary were in power, it was a very opaque statement. It was one of big bankers and Wall Street executives. Warren and this class of people, they're naming names.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like, you know, when somebody refers to, you know, what's going on in our school system. Oh, but my kid goes to a great school. But then when you say, you know, for example, Shades Valley High School sucks. I didn't know that school even exists anymore. Oh, no. We have the greatest school there is. The point is that, you know, when somebody has a blanket or catch-all statement or a vague statement, you know, big banks or Wall Street, that doesn't mean anything. You know, the Wall Street people are saying it doesn't apply to me. But then when you say Google, when you mention Apple, when you bring in Amazon, all of a sudden say, oh, whoa, wait a second. I thought you meant those people. That's the threat of Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders and others. They're naming, they're being specific about who they're going to target. And these big democratically run corporations are going, screw you.
So you think when you go from generic to specificity, there's a more of a perceived threat there?
Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah, I'll go along with that. But then I think, too, that, you know, where they were talking in platitudes and generalities, I think the people that might have been threatened knew that they were just basically talking trash to gin up a base and didn't really mean it. Oh, you know, because like I say, every time you turned around, this, that, or the other bank was too big to fail, and we were bailing them out. Same thing with the car companies. And, you know, the low information people think that still think we bailed out car companies and don't understand that, no, the car companies would have been fine. We bailed out unions.
Right.
Oh, I don't know. A whole lot of machinations going on there. Well, look, man, you got to talk with Meg up and ask her what she thinks about the potential for the Democrats trying to, I don't know, what's a good word, sabotage our economy? They'll definitely want a downturn. If you start looking at the polling, that's where Trump really, really has done well with the American people, is how the economy has done. And, you know, when I say economy, you're looking at unemployment and
right.
Cost of living, just across the board, improvements there. And I do think that sooner or later, they're going to make a concerted effort to assault our economy.
I agree. And I definitely agree.
It'll be. Yeah. Well, I'll let you get back after it, and I'll keep listening.
All right. Thanks, Clark. Appreciate it so very much. Yes, Megan Barnes will be joining us a little bit earlier than normal today. Andy Puzder has a very interesting op-ed that he put out, the 7 most ridiculous economic proposals from the Democrat debate, because it's nothing but dystopian and despair, and certainly the dystopian state on just complete utter display. And we'll get into that here in just a little bit, because it's all a matter of screwing as many of the so-called billionaires as they possibly can, because at the end of the day, the wealthy are the evil ones. But, you know, always remember, folks, they're also the job creators, because taking from the rich does not enrich the poor. We learned that lesson many years ago. What's it been, 70 years since Ayn Rand and Atlas Shrugged warned us of this very situation, and it's coming to pass? That's right. She's absolutely right.
The government takes what they want and taxes what they leave behind. All I'm doing is feeding the beast that's trying to destroy me.
Report, the magazine for the American landowner, is a proud supporter of the Michael Hart Show. Currently, they're offering an exclusive subscription price for listeners of the Michael Hart Show. So click on the subscribe button on landreport.com and enter the code HARTSHOW at checkout and receive a 1-year discount on America's number one land magazine. You'll get a full year of the Land Report, which normally goes for $59, for only $15. That's a 75% savings off the cover price. Again, that's promo code HARTSHOW at checkout of thelandreport.com, and make sure to check out the Land Report on Facebook if you love land.
Don't you hate it when your computer is running slow? Did you know that could be a sign of viruses, spyware, or Trojan horses giving hackers access to your private data? Do not let your identity be stolen. Do not let your private documents be made public. Do not let a hacker hold your family photos hostage. Do let the industry-leading security experts at Liberty One Tech ensure that your computer and network are safe. Liberty One Tech will also help secure your online accounts to keep hackers out and make sure you never lose access. It's all free when you join the Talk Text Plus service. With Talk Text Plus, you have unlimited VIP access to expert technology help 7 days a week so that you can always make the right click. Sign up today and get the free security checkup at libertyonetech.com. That's Liberty, the number one, tech.com.
Heart of America and the Michael Hart Show is brought to you in part by the Unknown America Project. Unknown America myths and little known oddities about the greatest nation on earth explores many of the falsehoods and fallacies and revisions in American history that impact the beliefs and the thoughts of many people in this country today. So if you'd like to learn some of the most enduring myths that have been perpetrated on the American public for the last 100 plus years in this country, go check out the book at heartofamerica.net. That's heartofamerica.net.
www.unknownamerica.net and pick up a copy of Unknown America. It comes out to you absolutely no shipping, be autographed, and we'll even send you a copy of the United States Constitution is our way of saying thanks. So support the Unknown America Project by simply going to theunknownamerica.com, and thank you for your support.
Network. Elizabeth Warren was the big winner Tuesday night in Westerville, Ohio, as well as Senator Bernie Sanders and Mayor Pete Buttigieg of Indiana delivering strong performances. Problem is that most of them said absolutely nothing. Interestingly enough, the economic proposals, some of them absolutely, positively ridiculous. And in an op-ed by Andy Puzder, it was pretty stark that the economic ideas are really out of sync with reality. Number one is the complete lack of a plan. Not one candidate said anything like how they'll encourage American entrepreneurs to grow their businesses, creating jobs and the competition for employees that actually drives wage growth for working Americans. Instead, every policy proposal boiled down to dividing our economic pie into smaller pieces rather than proposing to grow the pie. Again, it is that mindset of lack. And a poverty mindset is a very, very powerful thing if you can justify it in the minds of an American voter. If you don't vote for me, you will be broke and poor. Let's not talk about personal growth. Let's not talk about motivation. Let's not talk about innovation. Let's talk about ways to take the already finite amount of money that we are admitting is finite until we talk about our idiotic policies and divide that amount of money while turning the wealthiest Americans, the most successful Americans, into absolute societal pariahs. That's the agenda. Number two, the growth of government. Every proposed solution that we heard on the debate stage was based on empowering government, diminishing our freedom, increasing our taxes, regulating our businesses, and creating massive, unprecedented government dependence. And this goes right back to what we were warned of with, well, Atlas Shrugged. And again, from the movie, no matter how benevolent it might sound, we should all be suspicious of anyone that asks us to sacrifice our freedoms and expand the power of government and then put them in charge. Remember this line?
The government takes what they want and taxes what they leave behind. All I'm doing is feeding the beast that's trying to destroy me.
That movie came out years ago. The book written in the 50s. And voila, here we are today. Number three. The middle class, Medicare for all, even assuming we wanted to eliminate all private insurance, could we pay for it? The Mercatus Center, a think tank at George Mason University, conservatively found that Medicare for all would cost taxpayers $32.6 trillion over the next 10 years. The federal government's total revenue for fiscal 2018, the federal government's total income for the last year on record, because fiscal years begin in October, $3.3 trillion. And even that was insufficient to cover the existing expenses, which total $4.1 trillion. But according to George Mason University, just Medicare for all would cost $32 trillion. But we only make $3.3 trillion. And if you think the billionaire is going to make up the slack, that money doesn't exist. Again, why? Because we have a finite amount of money and resources. But then to hear the debaters say it, we have an unlimited pool. which is why we can, number one, I suppose, print money. But it doesn't work that way, and now does it? So we have this proposal of $32 trillion, but we only make $3.3 trillion, and that's just one program. No wonder Elizabeth Warren refused to answer any questions about increasing taxes for the middle class. In addition to Medicare for All, we have the Green New Deal. And by the way, AOC and the squad has come out and endorsed Bernie Sanders. In addition to severe restrictions on our freedoms and unprecedented expansion of government, a study by the American Action Forum, co-authored by former director of the Nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office, also known as the CBO, found that the GND would cost as much as $93 trillion over a 10-year period. That includes universal health care, so we're looking at an average of about $9 trillion a year, which is 200% higher than we even bring in. And then one proposal they all support is getting rid of those pesky Trump tax cuts to increase income taxes on the wealthy. Taxpayers making about $500,000 a year had total income of $2 trillion. So even a 100% tax on the wealthy would again fall short of funding Medicare for All, let alone the whole gross national domestic programs. What about an additional wealth tax on assets, as both Warren and Sanders proposed? Well, wealth tax doesn't work. In 1990, there was 12 countries in Europe that had a wealth tax. Today, there's three. These taxes failed because, among other things, they push people and their wealth to more tax-friendly countries. Over 25 years, the cumulative effect of even a 2% annual tax on wealth, as Warren proposes, would result in taxes equivalent about 40% of that wealth. If you could move to a more tax-friendly nation and keep that 40%, wouldn't you? Well, wealthy people do all the time. Perhaps the crowning mistake on the debate stage was the failure of any candidate to acknowledge that under Trump's free market policies, the very policies these Democrats would reverse, things are actually going better than they have in decades for working Americans. More Americans are employed than any time in our nation's history. The unemployment rate is at a 50-year low, and the competition for employees is driving wage growth. In September, workers' wages increased 3.5% over the year, the 14th consecutive month that workers' wages have been at or above 3%. Do you see, they're speaking again out of their backsides without any real plan that is workable. And Obama did the same thing. Clinton did the same thing. And then what did we get out of Obama? We got Obamacare, which I guess is what Bernie's referring to, where we're talking about 87 million people being underinsured. I guess that's on the previous administration, but they kind of omit that. What else did we get? Oh, cash for clunkers. The whole cell phone debacle. And the list goes on and on and on. So again, the underlying theme here is because we are a dystopian state, meaning we're in a state of despair and angst. Interestingly enough, it can only get worse under the proposals of the Democrats. So this means one of two things. Either they don't get it or they don't care. Or the third option here, they have no intentions of implementing any of this stuff. Oh, yeah. Obama was going to pay for my mortgage. Remember that? No more foreclosures. Forgiveness of student loans. And yet, it didn't happen. What a dumbass do you have to be to sit there and let somebody lie to you and listen to them dribble on about this stuff with them full well knowing it's not achievable. It can't be accomplished. But I guess there's enough folks out there, the great unwashed, or maybe it's the illegals that come here that don't speak English, that don't understand they're being lied to begin with. And so it goes. over and over and over, it repeats itself. So staying just with Medicare for all, according to George Mason University, $32 trillion to pay for this. But we bring in $3.3 trillion a year. Now, the $32 trillion is over 10 years. But what we're being told is the income of the United States government would, the entire country, flatline just to pay for health care for all. Where's military spending? Where's educational spending? Environmental spending? On and on and on it goes. And then we get these notions about student loans, which most student loans, most of the loan money itself, like your mortgage, is underwritten by the federal government. Yeah, there's private loan companies out there, but that's where the money's coming from, the federal government. So Fannie Mae and Ginny Mae and Freddie Mac, all those, they're mortgage companies, semi-privately owned, they're government agencies. If you really want to get deep in the weeds, Google a guy by the name of Franklin Raines. He ran Fannie Mae under the Clinton administration. How does a government employee retire worth tens of millions of dollars? Yeah. Inquiring minds want to know. Or do they? Which is why I've told you 1,000 times before, you can believe it, you cannot believe it. If you don't believe it, it's on you. You're being lied to. And I just do not know any other way to package that. We see it every single day in this country, and you certainly saw it two nights ago on the debate stage. These dollars do not exist. And interestingly enough, the ones that would have you believe they do are currently the front runners. That being Sanders and Warren. Joe Biden is all but done. Joe Biden is so far removed from reality. And so far removed because, you know, in addition to the fact that we have one gaffe after another with him, the simple fact of the matter is that the Ukraine crisis with Hunter has begun to dog him. His age is certainly playing into this. But more importantly, he's too moderate for this particular class of Democrats. Interestingly enough, with the exception of Sanders, Buttigieg and Warren, Booker, Harris, and others, they were not nearly as liberal 2 years ago, 3 years ago. Their ideas have germinated in this petri dish of wealth distribution. And the bottom line here is they're just saying whatever they need to say to get elected. There has been article after piece, after research, after observation that has proven that nothing that they are espousing is workable. Then we learned a few days ago about this debate, this discussion about the possibility of taxing your frequent flyer miles. The more you fly, the more you pay. Because on top of everything else, they're now tying frequent flyer miles to climate change. Well, you didn't really need to go on that vacation to Hawaii, so your carbon footprint just spiked, causing climate change. And you also got yourself 500 new frequent flyer miles, which we're not going to treat, wait for it, as income. How many people in this country travel almost daily for business reasons? Every aspect and every asset that you accumulate would be taxable, and yet it would still fall short. It's absolutely mind-numbing. Not that they say it, but that there are people in this country that would believe it. You know, and you don't, I sometimes I think I need to give a pass to people that just might not be that economically savvy to understand. But doesn't it kind of go back also to the aspects of common sense? If it sounds too good to be true, it must be. I mean, I guess there really are people out there that fall for that BS that if you share this on your Facebook page, Bill Gates will give you $480. Retweet this and you'll get a new iPhone. Are we really? Well, I guess I just answered my own question. We really are that dumbed down in a lot of senses. We're always hearing about the increase in the spike in this country of criminal scams. People posing as the IRS or the Secret Service Social Security Administration. Get your credit card out because you got to pay this fine or this fee, or we're going to take away your Social Security benefits. Yeah, that's another big one that's out there. And there are people that fall victim to this and pay it. Scams abound. Oh, can't somebody stop them? No, you can't stop them because too many people are participating in them. Surrendering their income, their money, their credit card number, so they don't have to go to jail or whatever. You missed jury duty. This was the sheriff's office. Yeah, they tried that one on me. Yeah, I actually called the judge. Got him on the phone, and he was laughing his butt off. He said, Mr. Hart, if I wanted to arrest you, I wouldn't call first. Kind of makes sense there, Judge. Thanks for your time. You know, this happened about 2 months ago. So I assume that if we are in a situation or a condition where so many Americans are getting scammed so easily and so readily, then we have absolutely no right to be surprised that on a political level, on a federal level, when the exact same thing occurs, that people fall for it. But it's the same mindset. If you don't have your credit card ready, you're going to get arrested because you missed jury duty. If you don't vote for me, you're going to lose your health care and your access to college and student loan, and you're going to be homeless. We're giving away free tents, but that's beside the point. Why are we seeing homelessness and hunger issues the most prevalent in the democratically run cities? Cities that are already quasi-socialist in their nature. Because in their world, if something costs $32, and you have three, you can still afford it. Now, you think about this as well. Why tax the billionaires? Why tax rich people more frequently? Because there's no money anywhere else. It has to come from there. As promised, we're going to get a little bit early today and speak with our good buddy Megan Barth. As I've got a couple of hits, media hits myself, I've got to do a little bit later on. So to help us break down the news of the day and perhaps give us some thoughts and insights into what took place a couple of days ago on the Democrat stage, we welcome in Megan Barth of ReaganBabe.com. Hello, Megan. How are you?
Hey, Michael. I'm doing well. Excuse my voice. I have a cold.
Oh, I'm sorry. We could have let you sleep in this morning, but I appreciate you jumping in here a little bit early since we got to dip out a little bit early. But I want to jump right in there, and we're going through today just the depressing Democrat debate. Not the debate itself was bad, but to listen to Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders, the world's on fire. We have no money. Everybody's broke. Everybody's dying. If you don't vote for me, you're not going to have health care or college access. What was your take on this thing from a couple nights ago?
I think Donald Trump just won 2020, and honestly, Donald Trump could win 2024. The Democrats don't have a bench. Where is their bench? I mean, it's pretty bad when you have Fox News, MSNBC, CNN, and every other news network looking for somebody else that's not on that stage. Do you think Michael Bloomberg will run? Do you think Hillary Clinton will run? Do you think Michelle Obama will run? That should tell you everything you need to know about what that lineup looks like when you have pundits and even other people within the Democrat Party or even outside of the Democrat Party, like Judge Judy. You know, Judge Judy comes out the other day and says, well, I'd vote for Michael Bloomberg. And so This tells me that there might be a dark horse. I don't know. I don't want to, excuse me, I don't want to say something that perhaps will never happen, but I think it is worth kind of speculating, because when we were looking at 2016, that election, we were all looking for a dark horse, and it turned out to be Donald Trump. But, I mean, he was one of 17 people on that stage that rose kind of like a phoenix from the GOP ashes. I mean, we had lost two major elections, Romney and McCain, and so we had an outsider. With this, excuse me, we have a bunch of insiders, with the exception of Tom Steyer, who owns five ties, and they're all the same ties. I mean, do you find that a little strange? I find that a little strange.
Yeah.
But a billionaire nonetheless, who also said, not on the stage the other night, but he had said that if the Democrats, hold on one second, Michael. Excuse me. If the Democrats win, the Republican Party is finished. And I totally believe that. If the Democrats win, not only will the Republican Party be finished, but the country will be finished. If the Republicans win, then, of course, it's the end of the world. That's what he said. If the Republicans win, then it's the end of the world. It's another Armageddon. I think between you and I, we've probably lived through a dozen Armageddons that the Democrats have predicted. But Tom Steyer isn't an outsider. He doesn't. He spent $40 million on basically a ticket to get him on that stage. And really the only thing that he's known for is his money and his political activism, but he certainly isn't known for policy. I mean, he's an outsider. He's not a politician, but he doesn't have the same charisma that Donald Trump had, nor does he have the same fight. So that stage yesterday, or excuse me, a couple nights ago, was filled with people that are trying to out-commie each other. Like, who can take your money the fastest? Who can take your guns the fastest? They don't have any policy positions. And they hate Trump. Shocker. But you have to stand for something instead of stand against everything. They're not delivering a positive message. They aren't winning the hearts and minds of the American people. I mean, those that really aren't paying attention and those that are hardcore leftists, sure, but hardcore leftists don't have hearts and they don't have minds. And so if you looked at the stage, the dozen people on that stage, if we had to pick, right? Okay, Warren's the favorite. She's leading in the polls. God, I hope they run her. Good God, I hope they run her. And then she'll probably pick, the political identity candidate, either Cory Booker or Gay Pete. You know, they got to pick either a person of color or a person that's gay, because, God forbid, you can't have two women on the ticket, because that's not going to win. So that's what the Democrat Party has become. This is what we got.
Yeah, and it's so amazing to me that there is such a lack of message. You know, Clinton ran on hope. Barack, ran on hope and change. The Democrats now are running on a platform of, God, America sucks. And, you know, I that has just never worked, Megan. And I mean, you've known me a long time. To know that, you know, my main ballywick here is breaking down the news of the day through the prism of the past. We talk about history all the time and how it impacts the future and what's going on in America. And the Democrats today almost demonstrate the reason that I do just that. Because there's no proof of the success of socialism anywhere in the country or anywhere in the world. I find it interesting that in the minds of Bernie Sanders, if a billionaire has this much money, then somebody else must have without, which by that very definition means that money is finite. There's always so much of it to go around, so we have to take it from this group or that group. But then in a socialist ideology, money can't be finite. You can't fund the policies. And they're either that stupid or that drunk or that insidious, and I can't put my finger on it. Because they got to know, Megan, every one of them, pardon my French, here it comes, every one of them is full of shit And I don't understand why people can't see right through it, because these people cannot believe what they're saying. They've got to be smart enough to know their crap don't work. And I think you're right. There will be a dark horse.
Yeah, I think there needs to be, because I think, like I said, when all the pundits on, you know, the major networks are looking outside of the 12, there's other people that are also looking outside the 12, and people like Michael Bloomberg, people like Hillary Clinton. Who knows if Michelle Obama, you know, will run, but, you know, God help us if she does. They're looking for a moderate. That's really what the Democrat Party is looking for. That's why Joe Biden entered the race. They're looking for a moderate because they know that the party has gone so far left that the party has left a huge middle, and the huge middle is independents. Did you happen to see what happened in Louisiana?
I do not believe I did.
I will post it. I was supposed to post it yesterday, but I will post it today on ReaganBabe.com. The Democrats got their ass kicked, and I mean their ass kicked up and down. We've got a runoff for the Louisiana governor, the GOP. And the Louisiana governor, if you want to talk about moderate, is kind of moderate. He is a pro-life Democrat. There still is one left. But the Louisiana legislature is only like less than half a dozen votes away from a supermajority. So Louisiana is bleeding red as far as Republican red. And I believe that this is an harbinger of things to come. Yes, Louisiana is in the South. But when you look at the turnout, the demographics of the turnout of that election, you had a ton of Democrats cross over and go to the Republican Party. They swept the independents. And in a special election, they had a record turnout. In a special election, as you and I both know and people out there, people don't really show up, right? It's a special election.
Right.
Yeah, who cares, right? No, this had record-breaking turnout. And then we look at North Carolina. We were supposed to lose that. Remember that special election? Everyone was telling us it was
right, tight.
It was such a tight race. Yeah, no, we won that one too. And I'm looking at interviews from Ohio, from Iowa, from Michigan, Minnesota, whoever's there, they're interviewing Democrats. And the Democrats, but we're talking old school Democrats, are pissed about this impeachment charade. They know it's a charade. The American people aren't as stupid as the Democrats need us to be. I saw an interview with a Michigan auto worker who had been voting Democrat basically for his whole entire life. And he's like, I don't like Trump, but I like his policies, and I hate what's going on with the Democrat Party right now. I'm voting for him in 2020. This is time and time again. So the American people aren't buying what the socialists are putting down, because deep down, even though that they may have pulled the D for their entire life, whether it was Kennedy or Carter or whoever, they are now going to pull the lever for Donald Trump, because they are seeing the success of Donald Trump and they are seeing the socialism of the Democrats. And the Democrats, quite frankly, Michael, you and I both know, they've always been totalitarians at heart. They've always been socialists. It now they just can comfortably come out and talk about, I'm a democratic socialist. Well, what's that? Well, I'm a democratic socialist. You're a freaking socialist. There's no difference. It doesn't matter if you put some dressing on it or Thousand Island or whatever you're trying to put on socialism. It doesn't taste better. It's still socialism. And this is why the Democrats want to, one, abolish the Electoral College, because most of the socialists, Marxists, and leftists, and communists live in the boroughs of New York, like where AOC comes from, and then, of course, the streets of L.A., or California in general, but the streets of L.A. and San Francisco. So, you know, they'd get that. That's why they want to abolish the Electoral College, so they can wipe out the guy in Michigan that I just talked about and all those people that are leaving the Democrat Party in droves in the Midwest, as well as the South. And you've got Bernie Sanders. Here we go. Bernie Sanders. Didn't he look better than Joe Biden? And the dude just had a heart attack.
Yeah. Yeah, he did, actually.
He just had, what, two stents, three stents? Do I hear four? I mean, he looked a lot better. So that is why the Democrats not only want to abolish the Electoral College, but they are appealing towards the youth. And this is what Tom Steyer did very well in 2016. He worked behind the scenes to get out the vote. He started, I think it was the New Majority or something. Nonetheless, a party with his billions and billions of dollars. He would pick up in Nevada here, for example, he literally rolled out literal red carpets with air-conditioned buses, very nice coach buses, served, you know, food and everything else like that, and was taking kids to the polls. So he was enticing them. So this is why the Democrats want to lower the voting age to 16. I think I said before to you, the Democrats believe their sweet spot, and I've heard this from a senator, a Democrat senator. The Democrats believe that their sweet spot is Generation Z. And when you look at Generation Z, that's like, I think it's like 16 years old to like 22 or something like that. Basically the time where you're just looking to, you know, smoke a joint and get laid, basically. I mean, that's it, right? So you've got this generation that has been conditioned and indoctrinated to believe that socialism solves all the ills of the country, income inequality, et cetera. Right. So that's why they want to lower the voting age to 16. You know, if they can't rig an election to win like Hillary Clinton, they just simply want to ignore the rules, change the rules, or destroy the Constitution in order to win.
No, you're absolutely right. Megan, you know, like I told you in our text message yesterday, unfortunately, I'm a little bit tight on time today because I've got to do a couple other media hits myself. So I'm going to ask you to tell the listeners how they can find out. I want them to sign up for your newsletter, which I'm absolutely loving. Oh, and by the way, guess who I'm having drinks with this evening? Guess who I'm having drinks with this evening?
Gina
Loudon. Gina Loudon's in town.
Good. Well, yeah, I just saw her in Miami last week.
Yeah, I haven't seen Gina in a while. Yeah.
Good.
Yeah,
all
so
right,
we'll talk
about
I will. And we'll make sure we talk about you too.
Well, I was on a panel with her husband on voter fraud. It was unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I do want to talk about it. I don't know if John's with her or not. She's actually coming to Birmingham for a wedding. She texted me last night, like, you know, so I have no idea where we're going to go. But yeah, we're going to hook up a little bit later on, catch up for old times, because I hadn't laid eyes on Gina in probably 4 or 5 years. But with that said, just want to let you know, I will say hello to her for you. But before we part ways today, I want people to sign up for your newsletter, find out more about Reagan Babe. So tell everybody where they can find more about Megan Barth.
Oh, I love that you love the newsletter. I love it too, but I'm biased. ReaganBabe.com. Reagan is in Ronald, Babe is in Ruth. ReaganBabe.com. You can sign up for the newsletter, the daily news feed. Drudge has gone off the deep end, but I used to call myself the female Drudge. I don't want to do that anymore. But every day I update the website with, about a half a dozen or a dozen pieces, depending on what I'm reading. So you can get the news there. So ReaganBabe.com, and then on all the socials at ReaganBabe on Twitter, on Facebook, as well as Instagram.
Excellent. Well, you do a bang up job. I love reading it, and your insights are always spot on. And I appreciate your time. I appreciate you popping by this morning for this abbreviated edition. I appreciate your friendship, and I will definitely say hello to Gina Loudon for you this evening. And I hope you feel a lot better, Megan.
Thanks so much. You guys have fun tonight, and thanks again.
Hey, we'll talk soon.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.